Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Romeo Carey podcast. Didn't know what it was going to be, did you?
No.
You didn't really know what you were entering.
No.
And there's reason for that. Do you want to know what the reason is?
I hope this isn't a gotcha interview.
No, it's not. First of all, let's start from the beginning. I've got two of one of my favorite students I've ever had entering the world of Beverly Hills education. Two really dynamic, talented, so talented in fact that they don't even realize what power they wield. And the idea that we're having this conversation today is just the calm before the storm. Because these two characters that I'm about to introduce you to are about to launch into the world of the cinema gods like we've never known. They're both award-winning in that high school. Remember, when you award somebody in high school for being the best at something, that means they've already learned the hard wiring during the development years, how to conquer, how to achieve, and how to really stand out. And that's something that most people don't achieve later, you know, that happens later in life and is 10 times more difficult. But when you achieve it in high school, the wiring's already laid. And so the act of repeating it becomes secondary. Bennett Gershwin and Owen Lloyd, class of 2017, and both state champions, nationally ranked, and television achievement award winners. So welcome to the show. Let's take it from the beginning.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not rare that I mean this, but I think that was literally too kind.
Well, yeah, humility.
But
glowing review.
I didn't do it enough. I mean, because I remember both of you. You guys were incredible. You were incredible on stage. First time I saw you, I go, who's this kid?
Thank you.
I mean, it was absolutely a performance that I was in theater, and that was so bad. I mean, it was like embarrassing. But at a level that you were performing, both of you guys were performing, I saw you both together. I never really saw you not together. You guys are already bound by, you know, at the hip. The first time I saw you, I didn't know you, but I saw you on stage. I go, wow, these two guys is like an act. It's already, you're already, you know, the manifestation of the combination and the ability to rise above, so high above mediocrity was already achieved. And you guys were like freshmen or sophomores. I don't know what you were.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. This is definitely the stage upon which Bennett and I would mostly join forces, was in this building.
K-Bev is our womb.
Yes.
Oh, our absolutely. Well, yeah, no, because I saw you guys. I go, well, we got to get you over here because you guys don't realize theater's amazing, but theater fueled with digital.
It's not. Theater's awesome as an art, but I have never found a theater building to be like as exciting or comforting as a place like this.
No,
theater folk. It's for, you know, if you're worried about getting a wedgie.
Yeah. No, look, they're two distinct crafts, but theater ultimately is like, how do I become this character and how do I work on the craft, but it's never going to get you into the outer limits of the globe that you need. You need to marry that to digital content and the idea of exposure, and that part is the component that changes everything when you're an actor, because now you can like use that genesis of just your acting chops and now propel that into a world that's completely foreign to theater by itself.
Yeah.
So how did you guys first meet?
Kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you remember your early days when you first like ran into each other in kindergarten?
We were very close. I remember deciding in my head that Bennett was my best friend, but also I was...
Even though we, at that point, we weren't like in class.
Yeah, we weren't. That was after. In kindergarten, the issue is that Bennett was always getting in trouble.
I was a talker.
He was constantly getting a red card for speaking. So I my early memories of Bennett were his head on a desk, just upset because he had been given the red card. for talking for like the fourth time in the month by this
Tirada.
Tirada. Almost made it.
Wow. What do you make of that? Just that foul, that act at such an early age to like. Do you think that was a good move from a teacher's point of view?
No. Well, I mean, you know, I'm resentful of it for sure because I was bored all day and I just wanted to get a joke out or two to someone. But, you know, I get it. It's disruptive. You can't be... the world's not your stage all the time.
I like that it didn't... It didn't... Because, look, a lot of things could happen in that kind of act, especially so early on. I know I learned this through coaching, and I didn't realize it. I had my son playing a soccer team, playing club, spending a bunch of money on club. He's in it for years. He's doing amazing. And you have this coach who's, like, really mean, right? And they, all the parents are like, ah, I'm like, this guy's, like, a little over the top for a 12-year-old. Come on. It's like, really? And I said, no, it's good for him. It's good for him because he's going to learn. It's what the real world's like. But it took me, and he was able to, they won the championship, and they won, so everything went well. But if it hadn't gone that way, it could have really gone south fast, because in the same way that adults protect their reputation, a little kindergartner has a reputation too. And when you go and destroy somebody's reputation at such an early age, soccer player, you idiot, sit down, don't do that. Why you go ruin that whole play or whatever? You know, just like, you can't defend yourself, right? You can't stand up for yourself. So what do? You crawl into a world that removes you from the public life, and I'm just going to be something, and a YouTube guy or a guy playing video games. I'm never going to put myself out in the arena because I don't want the embarrassment. It's not worth it. And so you withdraw. And so it changes your personality, but yeah. It didn't change yours.
Well, it kind of did, because I don't think of you now as, like if I shrunk you down into being a kindergartner, I wouldn't imagine you being, like, loud and boisterous in a classroom.
No, I wouldn't be loud and boisterous, but I'd be better at getting my jokes out in a way that's not disruptive.
I think it probably deflated you a bit at the time to be getting in trouble.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I started to fear you because I thought he was a troublemaker. But it wasn't
In hindsight,
it wasn't like he was...
You got to witness it.
Yeah, but he wasn't like smashing out windows or...
These were nonviolent crimes.
No, I was just talking.
I could tell you, Mrs. Tirada, what was her name?
Tirada.
Tirada. Mrs. Tirada attempted to have an effect on Bennett, no doubt, but it didn't work. Only because I think your ability to rationalize it, even at that age, well, you were kind of cool with it. You get it, and you're like, okay, but I'm not gonna stop me. I get it, and it's like a little depressing that I can't follow through with what I want, but it's not gonna kill me. Otherwise, you couldn't have been the person that I knew.
Yeah.
Right? You couldn't have, because that personally, if that happened to me. I don't know, just for my own kind of personality, I think it could have really damaged me. I think it could have really, like, put me in a shell for maybe the rest of my life.
Hmm. Yeah. I just remember my mom told me that I was a red card receiver very often, and I remember she told me at one point I just realized that it was like a meaningless punishment. Like, you didn't get any...
So probably your mom, as just from a psychological point of view, gave you, like, the right cues to
she
buy...
She gave me some good perspective.
Yeah. That's because if she said, look, you're one more, man, you're going to get me in trouble, and, like, played it off like it was something really horrible.
Yeah.
But she played it off like, don't take it so seriously.
No, a red card at the end of the day is a red piece of paper.
Yeah.
Like, see,
that is very telling, I'd say.
Yeah. Exactly. So, kindergarten. So how'd you guys bond in kindergarten?
It's so hard to.
My mom brought in a piano player to our classroom and had us do an act of some kind called "I'm a Little Hula Hula Baby."
Yeah.
So she brought in like a director and a piano player. I think she probably taught it.
Yeah, she did.
And she got the whole class outfitted with like. Tiki hats and
Hawaiian
skirts,
and grass skirts, yeah.
Grass skirts, and there's a "I'm a Little Hula Hula Baby" from the land of Waikiki, I can hula and I don't mean maybe.
Yeah.
Come with me across the sea. And then it gets a little sexy because it goes, I dance with my eyes, I dance with my hips, I dance with my something, and I wiggle my hips. Lips and hips.
A lot of words that get
Yeah. Anyway, it was a lot for a kid. I remember Bennett didn't want to participate.
I didn't want to wear the skirt.
Not going to do but, it.
That was a humbling moment because I remember, because I think it was an interaction with your mom where I was like, I don't want to wear the skirt. And she's like, put it on or down. Like, we're doing a whole thing here.
Wow.
And I eventually, I think I sucked it up. I put it on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That launched it. That's like, it doesn't get bigger than that.
Yeah, but we parted for many years after that.
And then came we didn't together go to school again, together, like, but we, second grade, fifth grade.
We maintained our friendship even.
When did you guys pick it up again?
Sixth grade?
Yeah, sixth grade.
But we periodically throughout the years, we had did like
birthday
we
parties.
We did cotillion together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
During what's those that? Years.
That's where you, it's like charm school.
So oh, okay.
Learned how.
You went to charm school together?
It wasn't quite charm. It was like...
It was classes.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Parents were
was...
bracing us for like bar mitzvah season or something.
Oh, yeah.
And...
What did you learn in that?
How to slow dance.
Yeah, slow dance.
Nice.
How to talk to women.
How to talk to women.
Give me a tip. I could have used that.
I mean, I feel like I probably lost it, but I had it pretty good at that age.
I remember one time part of it, they had us... all the students line up and there were like three adult women at the end of the line. We had to pay them each an individual compliment that nobody previously in line had complimented them. So we had to really use our eyes and our senses to cut. Cause you know, first few people get to say, it's a nice dress. Your hair looks nice.
Right.
And then, you know, once those like four people are done, you're up, you got to really get creative. Told a woman she had nice teeth.
See, that's this good. Is also telling.
That's
because
great.
I have very little ability with women our age, but I know how to make an older, plump woman feel like a million bucks.
That's what that class.
That's my demo.
Yeah.
And yeah. Damn.
Wow. That's priceless. That is priceless.
I won a lot of prizes in that class.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. And then you picked it up in the fifth grade? Is that when
sixth grade. To El Rodeo together.
Yeah.
What was that experience like, El Rodeo in its heyday? Wasn't it an amazing school?
Inarguably, the grounds were better than any of the other schools. And I think it was better than any of the other middle schools as well. I stick to that.
It's like it was being on like a mission.
Right.
Yeah. They had that amazing bell tower that you get to go see when you graduate.
Oh, storybook. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and they had these pictures of all the classes from, like, the earliest the school was. I mean, it was like a 100-year-old school or something.
But I also remember it being a tougher crop of kids, which was odd because it was my first Beverly Hills school.
Yeah. Right.
And you wouldn't think that ain't the other side of the tracks, but it was the place where kids were, maybe it had to do with the hormones and the age, where kids were getting into fights and there was there was locker rooms and, like... just a lot of different sort of anxieties that I had not yet tasted.
Encountered, because that went up to eighth grade, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so you had like people that looked like they were grown-ups.
Yeah, a lot of milestones.
I was about this tall when we graduated.
Really?
Yeah, I was like 6 feet tall.
Okay, yeah. Wow. So Bennett did have that advantage.
Wow.
He was the kid who had gone through puberty.
Wow.
So I'd ask him for a lot of advice.
And so when you made it to high school, by the time you made it to high school, had you guys done camp together or anything fun?
Camp.
We did art class. We did...
Any sports?
No, not really. Probably did like summer sports camp at some point, but...
Yeah.
Neither of us were particularly sporty.
And definitely more so than I am.
Slightly, because my dad was into it, but... We did do basketball together, and the story is that... Bennett got in trouble for having his hands in his pockets.
That would have been here. I was at Beverly now.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then you guys made it into high school.
Yeah.
What, now, were you guys buddies by that time when you got into high school?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what were we like freshman year? How much were we?
Freshman year, we started we joined Radio Airlift. We had our...
So we had already landed ourselves into kind of a hipster mindset?
Yes, before we did summer school health class before we started our freshman year to get a jump on the whole scene. And we met a kid who was probably a freshman or sophomore by then who told us about Airlift. And we were sort of honorarily signed up before we even started.
Slater? What was his name?
Sater.
Matt Sater.
Alex Leggett. Yeah. That we,
Alex Leggett.
I think what had happened is that, like, I was definitely more susceptible than Bennett to the Beverly Hills School District. I could get hopped up on the power of, like, how being obsessed about being in with cool kids or, like, girls and the parties and things like that. Oh, yeah. So I would occasionally lose myself and then find myself again with Bennett.
Yeah. Well, there was a while where you, maybe it was a sophomore year, but you wanted to go to boarding school for a while.
Yeah, I almost left Beverly. It wasn't boarding school. Maybe it was...
No, I remember it was boarding school because I was just like, you just watched too much Zoe 101.
I don't even remember that, but I know that I almost left Beverly after, I think, the first year I was having a tough time. It's weird. You have these, like, psychological dramas in your youth that you don't even remember how they felt or, like, where they went.
Right.
I know that as a freshman I was very unhappy.
Yeah.
I just had this, like, chip on my shoulder. And then one day it went away.
Yeah. Just teen angst.
Yeah.
Angst. It was just angst.
Well, it's nice that you remember it because you can go back. Like those are points in your life that you just hadn't, you know, maybe you hadn't added it all up. You have expectations. This is weird when you're in an explosion of an endocrine. It's like imagine how much baby grows like that, right? This is your last big growth spurt, and so much has to happen. In terms of just the biology, and there's all these new things are just like happening, right? And you would expect all that chemical compound and kind of explosions going to result in a lot of ways it can go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're not conscious of that. You're just living.
That's true.
And not until you look back at it, or if you had you run into someone like me, and I'll straighten you out.
That's true. I mean, so when do you remember meeting us?
Radio Airlift.
Yeah, so, but we were freshmen when I met you.
I think you guys, did you guys come in as eighth graders?
I don't think so.
No, we didn't get to do that.
I knew that you had known my brother a little bit.
I did know your brother because he used to do Radio Airlift too. He used to hang out with him.
I got a long way through middle school and high school kind of name dropping my older bro.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Smart.
And I remember meeting you.
Yeah. And then... You guys didn't really officially take the class until you were like.
I never did.
You never officially did.
I was never actually one of your students. I was just Airlift.
Just
you were more of
an affiliate.
A disciple. I was more of a disciple.
Wow. So you were never in the Radio Airlift class.
No,
you were never in the Radio.
Yeah, I was. Wow. I took a junior. And
you took
senior
a junior.
Year.
Wow, and you got an award, a television award. How'd you do that? And you weren't even officially in the class. How's that possible?
There was no radio class. There was only KBEV. It was
Radio Airlift.
Radio was
just
a club,
extracurricular.
Right? Yeah.
For us, I think it was more of just like some kind of identity or refuge, where it felt
we had our own little office space.
Yeah, and it had a little nostalgia kick to it of music that was a little more alternative or old school, and that was very.
Yeah.
Nourishing.
Right.
Us.
And then you guys competed in skills. And Bennett got into the whole Norman News thing.
I was an anchor, and then I got fired as anchor.
Who fired you?
Noella Trost.
What?
Yeah. She
Why?
Fired me. I don't know. It was, I think I was late on, but not too late on delivering my stories, and I had a very comedic attitude that I don't think she appreciated.
She was pretty dry when it came to like doing.
Yeah,
she had a real kind of cut and dry work ethic.
Yeah, but it wasn't a horror. The firing wasn't terrible because then I got to, I got my own segment. That was the comedic news.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wow.
I remember you had your own shtick, so. I knew you were an anchor too. I just figured you didn't have time to do that anymore. I forgot that she had she put you in another position. So.
Yeah. It's all right. I don't blame her. The guy, whoever replaced me, was did the role well.
Yeah, but probably prepped them too for skills for that competition.
Yeah.
That's what she was looking at. She wanted to win. I think they did win one year. I don't know, but so what were your you know, your this is like 2017, 5 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you look back at your high school experience, what are some of the highlights?
I remember being a very idyllic time. Like, I think of high school as a very, it's a very rich time in one's life because the backdrop of it was like so chaotic, and yet I really felt connected to my friends and to like there. I really enjoyed the kind of like metamorphosis it took me through. I liked who I was at the end, and then that kind of, you know, that cycle of life continues many times over.
It's kind of it's a culmination of everything the city brings together, right? Yeah. When you think of high school, well, high school. No, it's like the fabric that holds the whole damn community together.
Yeah,
you don't, if you don't get that, you don't get anything.
No, it's not trivial at all.
No, it's not trivial
but
at all.
But like
it's,
we witnessed a lot of craziness. Like I remember just all these different dramas that we would kind of get swept into. Like,
oh, yeah.
I was going to bat for these different faculty members, like in the drama department, people getting fired and escorted out of buildings, and kind of like the politics that I, you know, you would have with different teachers. It was like, I don't know what it would be.
It's like a bad novella, and it just gets worse.
Yeah.
And then you're right in the middle of it, and it's like, it doesn't affect you, but you get to see people's lives being like, you know, wrung out, and how could I help, and how this, they mean something to me. It's like, but it, think of it, it's such a great exercise. Do you know what I mean?
It's true.
In high school, to be like, try to rescue somebody, to play a real part in like trying to put something back together.
Yeah.
It's really amazing because you got to step up. This is it. It doesn't get bigger than this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great story of yours throughout high school, or maybe story is not the right word, but journey that you went on.
I can remember your performances at microphones at board meetings, and
yeah.
I don't remember what they were about because, you know, I'm shooting them, right? Yeah. And I'm like, wow, this guy really did his homework. He's ready for this. He really gave it to him.
I think what happened is in my head, I was always like kind of a slacker. That was like the archetype that I that found to be glamorous or cool, which was like, you know, somewhat debaucherous, sort of rebellious, shaggy hair.
Friend group, there was a known rule of life that the day before a test or essay, you'd get a text from Owen asking about what's the rub.
Yeah, so like that was something I would not prescribe to anyone, because now I'm in a part of my life where I still am in a good place, but like I'm really enchanted by like discipline and trying to kind of integrate that, and it's hard because I didn't do that when I was younger, but I guess to my defense, like I was shockingly very involved with this school. Like
I
was in a lot of corners, and I was like definitely. I was kind of wheeling and dealing in this way,
right?
Yeah,
you're like a politician
kind of like a
combination politician, court jester.
Yeah, you're like a Greek politician.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the ecosystem. I think it instilled in me the kind of feeling of like...
That's
like
a great word for it, the ecosystem.
Yeah, no doubt you owned like a piece of the school. It was like yours. It was all carved out. It was all custom made for you, and it was like everybody knew it, and everybody got out of your way. Don't mess with him. He's got.
We literally had our own piece of the school.
Oh, we did.
That's the most surreal memory for me, is that we had that closet back there by Master Control.
Oh, yeah.
That was the radio airlift closet, and it was like.
It was hours.
It was always buzzing. It was always buzzing too. It was like stuff was going on.
It was buzzing, and we had music in there, and like lighting and couches.
Women and
it felt you were part of a bigger when you walk into this building, it's partly why they haven't knocked it down yet. This building has its own energy form.
Yeah.
It's got, when you come close to it, you can feel it. You just like, bam, it hits you,
it's
right?
True.
It was hitting us on the way in.
You know it. You know you've arrived, right?
Yeah.
It also keeps people away. It keeps people you don't want around away, because they know they got to enter the energy field.
Right.
So you guys were part, you're part of this energy field. You know there's all this stuff going on out here, and you're like part of it. And then you became part of the, you know, you were a tentacle, but you would move right into center stage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that part.
Well, because we couldn't live in, we couldn't be dormant in any one place. It was like you had to pay your dues outside of that egg, and you could return home to like triumphantly to the radio room.
Absolutely.
So there, I mean, it's literally at the heart of the school. It's in like the very center of the whole thing.
But we'd have to, you know, handle business at the foot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The rectum.
Now, when you went to competition, how was that? When you, the Skills USA, and how did it happen that you ended up in that Skills USA competition? I think you guys were the first, although I think Sater got gold too.
With,
I'm not mistaken.
I was with him.
Yep.
Well, you were with Sater when you got
one.
The gold.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think, was Sater me? Was there some?
Yeah, there was some deception where one...
Well, we were at regionals, but someone didn't show up, so we had a sub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, can we speak on this?
Oh, yeah, go right ahead.
Statute of limitations
perfectly
is
fine.
Because, we had some identity thing where I think Bennett wasn't there, someone wasn't there, so someone...
Yeah. I think I was absent and Sater was me on paper.
Okay. But also, remarkably, at that same competition, someone
with
else...
The same, wait, with the same judges.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
At the same competition... Someone from KBEV wasn't there, so I had to fill in for them.
Right.
We couldn't do two categories, so I remember we like greased my hair and gave me glasses, and I just kind of
so funny.
Sat there and like pretended to have a whole
I knew you could pull it off because you're you're an actor.
You went full character.
It worked.
Oh,
two completely
method.
Different people.
Yeah. But I think if I would like talk about those competitions without slandering them, they were staggering, because like the one in San Diego that we went to, you don't realize until you go how many people participate in this.
Oh, it's insane.
And they all have the red jackets, and it feels like a religious order that exists.
Like you joined a cult.
It was fairly cultish when we went.
Fairly cultish,
when we joined, there was a lot of the studying we had to do outside of our field of radio was like...
About this organization.
Yes, indoctrinating.
And people
the,
are trading pins.
Skills USA.
Yes, the pin
people
trade.
Are trading
yeah.
pins, and there's like... like the food, like I remember going into a restaurant, and it was like it felt like a prop restaurant. Like it felt like
because it was this.
It was like North Korea.
It was in San Diego, and it was this huge complex that had everything built in one. It had the restaurant, had the ballroom, had all the whatever. It was like 100 acres. It was insane.
But I remember our drive home was one of the most ecstatic days of my entire life.
It was your birthday.
Was it my birthday?
It was your birthday that
day. Oh, wow.
And it was one of the best days of my life.
Really?
Great day.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I remember we stopped at like an open field with butterflies.
Yeah, we stopped at a field with some sunflowers, and we went to, what was the
You
diner?
Have a shirt.
Yes.
No,
was it?
Pans? No, not pans.
We also stopped, wait.
Penny's Cafe?
Yep.
Penny's Maybe. Cafe. We went to Kentucky. Yeah, right. We went to
there
Kentucky.
Was that, yeah, so that was
then we
San
went
Diego,
to Nationals after you won
then,
state. Number one in state, right? So you beat out all those radio people, which wasn't easy. You got to think about it.
Well,
right?
The thing is that we got far because they would ask us, because we were a club and we were also in the modern era, which was so easy to do a radio show. It was like hitting a button and shooting it out into the world.
Right.
We hadn't really bothered to learn the, you know, about Hertz and about equipment.
We never had a soundboard.
No.
Between us. Yeah.
So and
that was
something I wish I knew. Like,
yeah.
not to say it would have been any different, but we would get by just because they'd give us the prompts and we'd make something funny.
But you were able to pass the knowledge test too, so you guys were pretty smart when it came, because you couldn't have gotten an award unless you scored high on the knowledge test.
But I would say that whole thing is kind of a metaphor for who Beverly and how who I formed me to be. Was the guy never been the guy with the hardware knowledge?
Right.
Or like, but it get, we had.
I think between the two of you, because you get to take it together.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Dial the brain power.
Between the
between
two
the
of
two,
us, we can pull it out.
Not that that's, I know anything about hardware, but I.
He knows
I
a little bit more.
I could scrape together some editing.
Just
that
your.
Was my
no,
skill.
Because you guys have higher IQs, the line of questioning and how you can decipher between these questions which is the best guess, you guys dialed it in. Because the radio test of all the tests is one of the most difficult, because you're talking about radios and you're talking about things that are completely foreign unless you did your homework.
Right. I mean, like science. Like, we're talking about, like, waves.
Yeah. I must have put some stuff in front of you so you can, like...
I remember we tried to study on the plane, but even then I was, like...
It's too much to, it's too much to digest.
It's just like, all right, this is not going to make this way in.
Exactly. But... You guys couldn't have actually taken state unless you scored high on that.
Right.
Had we passed the test, I think we would have taken Kentucky.
Oh, no doubt.
Our show was funny.
This is what they tell you. When there's two teams that are really matched, the difference is the knowledge test. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to go with the smarter group. It's just what you have to do. Because maybe they got lucky on this show, and it's like, yeah, it's out of this world, it's good, but man, they suck. They don't know anything. And so they always give it to the person who actually knows.
Do you think if you, on your current resume, mm-hmm. do you still include that award?
I don't know that I do. I should, maybe, but it feels...
it feels like too
childish. It feels funny to... Yeah, just because I'm over 20, so I feel like... A teenage achievement is...
You should, because the thing that distinguishes you between other people and what gets you in Wikipedia, the first question they ask in Wikipedia if you ever apply is, what awards did you win?
Right.
And when you beat people in the whole state in a competition, and when you beat people and you landed into a national arena and you ranked in the top 10, that should be on your resume forever.
Okay.
Especially if you're in that field, right? Because it already tells people, you guys already achieved greatness at this age. And that...
If I were applying for a radio gig...
Yeah, it all depends. It all depends what you're doing, where you're pointing your resume.
I remember now that the award ceremony at the national level was like,
in a stadium.
It was like the Staples Center. It was filled to the brim. People were going crazy.
300,000 people from 50 states.
See, but that's just weird. It's like, and to them, they clearly knew a lot more about the history of this competition than we. Like,
because we
were fresh.
It was the center of their lives.
Yeah, it'd been going on for 40 years by the time we showed up.
Yeah, but so it was like an institution. All of Louisville was like... their whole center of life is this competition.
Oh, yeah.
And we were staying in a casino in southern Indiana.
that smelled like a different brand of cigarette on every floor.
That was an
awakening as well.
Yeah. Talk about a setup for a TV show or a movie. That place is just absolutely straight out of like a Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah, for better or worse, just riddled with character.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Oh my God. So that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember that casino was in a field, like nothing around it for miles, and we had to drive past 200. Dead animals to get to the nearest roadkill. Walmart.
But just again, like the little sagas and things that came up in that. We were there probably, 4 days?
Remember we set out to go find...
Yeah, fireworks.
Remember when we set out to go find our rate, because we had a prompt. We had to come up with this radio thing, and you guys said, hey, I need to drive. We need to find... This has to happen today. We got 24 hours to make this recording. And, we happened upon a pawn shop. I don't know why we went to the pawn
that
shop.
That was just because we were... It wasn't,
because they could sell guns.
No,
that was it.
I don't know if it did follow the logic, or if it was just us saying,
because the prompt had to do with the killing in Florida or something.
And it was, we happened upon a pawn shop owner who did sell guns and was a gay man.
Right.
So that was the nexus of that story.
Oh, when we landed him, that was it.
And yet somehow we only got the 15 seconds out of his interview.
Yeah, because I thought that we kind of went in that pawn shop on a whim, just because it would be fun. And
I think we went under the auspice of getting an interview, but we really wanted to see if they had swords. Cool. Yeah,
right.
And they had guns, and then I remember chatting with the guy, and then the next thing we know, we get his number to take him out to dinner.
Right.
Then we're downtown. I remember that we were in a pizza place with arcade games. And I remember I got a prank call, and it really freaked me out. He was talking down off the ledge about the prank call, and then he showed up.
Yeah.
And
that pizza place, by the way, is lodged in my memory as the best burger I've ever had.
Really?
I can't forget it. It was really, really good.
I took a pretty good photo of that night. I remember.
Great photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's telling us about
He was telling us about jewelry, how he does celebrity jewelry.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, guy was big time. He talked to us about his early life, how he hitchhiked out to California and he was living on the street. And this guy was like,
he was. I can look him up, get a ring from him.
Yeah, he was a real character, but smart guy. You know, he was.
Yeah. I mean, those 3 hours of tape were filled with, you know.
Colorful stuff. Yeah.
But learning that if you strike up a conversation, someone start getting their story. That's an amazing.
He bonded with us really once he kind of figured out he guys from Beverly Hills are doing something interesting. I spent time in California. I could help these guys out.
Yeah.
I know the story.
Yeah.
And then he became our tour guide that never ended. Yeah, it was like taking us all. I don't know what time we got away from. We started at dinner time at a decent hour.
Well, I remember we got home late and we had to edit the entire show. Now with
and we had to be up at 6 in the morning.
5 hours of content with him.
Yeah.
And Bennett and I were fighting a lot.
We were just cranky. I mean, it was an all-nighter. We didn't go to bed. I think we would, like, maybe at one point, like, while I was editing, you got to, like, knock out for, like, an hour or two. And I think that made me resentful for sure because I wanted to sleep really bad.
I felt really bad just getting you home at such a late hour and knowing that
it was not your fault.
I think that was also the same day that you had had
I was really sick that day. Yeah, I got sick.
And
yeah.
We had, like, I just remember it being, you know, the hotel room. We kept buying air freshener to purify our own hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
None of it would work.
No. We were spraying all the weirdest stuff. Yeah, I remember.
And I remember you did a sound that you demonstrated that you could do, like, a yeet sound with your tongue.
Oh, like
a special kind of whistle.
Oh, really? Yeah. I probably could. The whistle like that? Or
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got a lot of whistles. I could do
birds. See, I remember all of this vividly.
Wow. That's really good.
I don't remember as much.
Yeah. I remember we got some really crazy photo of a rainbow.
Yeah.
I think you were in it. I know you were in it. We jumped out of the car.
Yeah, I got the photo.
Yeah, I think you took the photo, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was an amazing shot.
Yes, I remember that there was a tornado warning.
Oh, right.
And then 5 seconds later, we pulled over to get a photo of the rainbow.
That's right.
I had never been to a place like that.
No, it was straight out of, like, The Wizard of Oz. It was just this strange world we entered into. It was like, well, might as well.
Colorful characters and fields and rainbows. And
yeah, now they moved it to Georgia, which is equally as strange. But not.
Have you been going in the past?
Yeah,
couple years?
We
going to nationals still.
Oh yeah,
great.
We were there last summer.
Great.
Yeah.
How are we doing? How's Cape?
We ranked 6th in broadcast. Great. We didn't have. Unfortunately, we had a string of radio for, like, I don't know what it was, 5 or 6 years. Yeah. We locked up state and we ranked 3rd. Was our top spot with. One of the guys that you handed
Tohar.
The baton. Yeah, Tohar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did really well.
Yeah, he was a good person to hand it down to.
Yeah, he really was, because he carried the torch. And then with COVID and stuff, it kind of sank our ship. And we did well in broadcast news.
But it seems like you guys really have a whole new...
Yeah, I mean, the places only seem to get stronger and stronger.
Oh, yeah, they always talk about the golden years at Beverly. The golden years.
When was that?
Like, I don't know when that was, but whenever it was, it doesn't exist anymore. But we've taken it to the platinum years. We're beyond the golden years. Wherever it was, we've taken it to a whole complete plateau that's above the grade that anything that you would expect from one of the early columns that held up the school. We're it.
Yeah.
We're it.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Now, this is the foundation of the school, in my opinion. This is the greatest
asset
that the school has, most definitely.
That's quite a compliment.
Oh, yeah. I think any young person who's involved in KBEV is incredibly lucky, because this is not something you see ever. Not on this scale, most definitely. Mm-hmm. This is the greatest creative incubator one can happen upon in their teen years.
You know, it's funny because I'm trying to put together a database and put it on some digital content that people can watch. All the success stories in the last 2 decades while I was here. Because there's a whole other one with Styles. Styles had guys that were, you know, nightly news anchors, you know, huge, like early pioneers of the field. They came out of here, but the last two decades, because I'm entering my 19th year, that we have three Forbes under 30 entertainment people that came out of KBEV. We have all these kind of successful people that are in every kind of walk of the entertainment field that are lighting it up, and to just put them into do you remember Joe Murayama?
Yeah.
Joe Murayama's huge. He was in 11th grade, and all he wanted to do is live animation, right? And he gets a call from Fremantle, the largest, North American television production company doing American Idol and everything in between, and Red Arrow, the biggest German television company. They come to him to launch their live action channel, YouTube channel, and they pay him a fortune to do a series, and he's in the 11th grade.
Wow. It's amazing.
He's right now in the 11th grade?
Oh, no, this was like kind of your era. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was around your time.
I think I kind of remember this.
Yeah.
Does that dude still come by and help out?
Do you know who
I'm talking about?
He's, which one? Oh, Dusty Stiles?
No. Oh. The guy that I went to buy paint with that one time.
Dan O'Dell?
That's not going to come away from his name.
Oh.
He was older.
And what was it? Did he help always here with sound and doing stuff with
me? He wasn't here like every day. No. He was an occasional helper. And I went over to Home Depot with him one time to buy paint to work the mural.
Yeah, it would have been Dan.
Yeah.
Dan still comes around. He does audio.
Cool.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Most of the people. Look, there's Styles.
We're here.
Styles has been here since the 70s.
Yeah.
Right. And he's going to be in this Saturday.
No, it's intoxicating.
Look, it's difficult to detach yourself from it because it's too much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. Look, I have a lot of conversations with, especially the people who, are in charge of this empire and don't really understand, because they can't really understand what's going on, because I know it better than they do, right? But they got their own sense and their own ideas, and they're going to do what they need to do. But I always tell them, I said, look, you don't know me well enough to know that if you're in a situation for two decades and you arrive every morning with the intent to be the most beautiful person you can be, you're going to discover that you're going to have generations of people who love you, right? And if you have generations of people who love you, they're going to stick up for you. If you're in somebody's conversation, they're going to come straight to you and tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the empire. That's the whole point of it.
It is.
Yeah.
And so just know that whatever you're saying and whatever you're doing, it'll come back to me. Not in a bad way, but just know you're not in a corporate office, or you're not in what you think you are. You're weaved into a fabric that's been sewn long before you got here, and you're just the line in that, and my lines are running through that fabric in ways that you can't comprehend.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, I always look for one thing when we do. We have the, talk about a propaganda czar, right? The arm to the voice of the community out of the school. And that's run by us, mm-hmm. right? All my students. But my mission is what's right about Beverly. That's really the lens that I always want to use for everything we do. But we also have a duty to voice
criticism. But it's a more compelling approach, I think, to what's right about Beverly. Because, problems are abundant and obvious. So it's actually it's cool for kids here to discover a sense of school pride. Because, it's oddly elusive, I think.
It is.
Well, because the school has such a reputation, it's been around for so long, and has all the connotations applied to it. There was a kind of jadedness that is very I don't know.
We were in a real school spirit drought when, at least during our era, I don't know if it's still the case, but I remember we attributed it to the fact that they were no longer doing permits for people outside of the district. Right. So there was no sense of, I get to be here. It was all people who had to be here. So there was like, and the sports team, I don't think we ever won anything. So it was like, this KBEV was the only thing for me, at least, that gave me school spirit to truly be proud of.
But and it gives you school spirit not just on behalf of KBEV, but it like kind of makes you proud of the whole thing, the whole
machine.
Well,
yeah, because KBEV is the literally and figuratively is in the heart of the school. Yeah. Everything weaves in and out of it. Theater's here, sports here, radio.
Right.
We got it all. Just well,
the other thing too is like there's a KBEV affords you a degree of shade that anybody who's not in it doesn't get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like a mafia.
And it is. And when you know it, well, not only that, it's because we earn it, right? We're working our butts off.
Yeah.
We're not just doing stuff and having fun. No. It looks like we're just having fun, but we're all actually doing work, right? We're delivering the identity across, it's the one classroom that the whole world gets to look at every week, right? Got the update, you got the news. I mean, if I could shove a camera into every classroom here every week on a weekly basis for 50 years, and then say, hey, this guy's still here, must be doing something right? I mean, so the point is, it's not like we don't earn it. It's not like we're just, taking up hot air. We're working diligently, and we're building kind of our futures in all these little successes that happen here, right? Yeah. Now, you ended up going to an interesting school. Both of you did when you left here. And how much of what you learned here kind of helped you where you went?
Well, the advice that I always hear from creative people is it's important to just get your early stuff out of the way. And like, you know, whose first ever thing is their favorite? You know, there are definitely some projects that I'm very proud of that I did in KBEV, but it was a driving force to actualize your ideas and to make them happen. So I did feel like I had a good few years of filmmaking under my belt before I even got to film school. And I remember I took a TV production class, very similar to KBEV. You know, it was the three camera setup and a set, and it was just nothing compared to KBEV. I mean, I'm not even kidding you. Like, the set looked awful. It was painted all different colors of gray. They had outdated tech, and nobody got to be one position. Everybody had to trade, and we produced like 21 minute shorts in a day, and it was ridiculous. It was mayhem, and it was great, and I loved the people in it, and I made something that I don't like in it, but the whole time I was there, I was like, this is... I've done this already. I've done this in a much more professional way than, you know, it's being presented to me now. And that was at the second or third most expensive private school in America. And KBEV, this is public. This is, you guys have an insane setup here that just puts anyone who gets to touch it is miles ahead just for the... just because they were here and they got to use the stuff.
It's true. You don't realize it until you actually measure it against what's really out there. And when you're in it and you're doing it, even at the level of doing radio stuff that you guys were doing, we're doing it at such a competitive grade because we started somewhere, but we're always, the idea is, they asked us when we go to Skills, because we keep showing up, right? California keeps showing up in other states or in California. When they come up to me, they said, look, we can't beat you. Could you come and talk to our group and tell them what you do? I'm like, oh, sure. And I said, she goes, what's the secret sauce? I said, we already won before we got here. Yeah. There's no secret sauce. We do this stuff every day. And so when we show up here, it's not, we're not competing. We are competing, but we're just competing with this stuff. While you guys are competing for the first time or second or third or fourth time, we do it every week. Yeah. That's the difference. I mean, because everything we do is always trying to get better. right? It's the act of taking it to the highest, the next plateau. It's like, who wants to stay where you're at? And you guys learned that here. It's like something I adopted from my father. My father would never step in front of a camera or on stage without taking on the added element of, I need to go to the highest pinnacle of where I've been. Otherwise, why am I doing it? It might be my last vehicle. It's the last performance. Of course I gotta strive to outdo whatever I'm made of. And I live with that. So that's everything is, you gotta crawl before you walk. You gotta get into these places. But the objective is for those that are prepared for it, like you guys can completely, and there's not a lot of people in that group. It's a small group. It's always the square root of any group is the group that you're talking to. You take 50 kids, what's the square root of 50? There's your audience, right? It's a small audience. But that audience is exactly yours to take to those places. And people like you fit in, you know, that you fit in that square root. And when when you have the tools, you have the creative force, and you have the will, all of a sudden, you've got to go far and wide to find that someplace else because it doesn't exist. That combination of all those elements have to live in that space, and someone has to be able to foster it. So I'm never a teacher. I don't go and like take your hand. I'm all mentoring. That's all I want to do. I want you to know and be clear on what exists and what the real world's made of and how to attack it and how to get the most out of it. What do you want in life? Whatever you want in life, you need to do all your homework. You need to do everything in your power to aim at that worthy goal and put your attention on it until you pull it into your life. Right? That's the only trick you ever know. You guys did that in high school. So when you do it in high school and recognize it's what do I want, put it on paper, put it in a calendar, this is what I'm going to have by this time, and chart a course. All humans have a target. They like throwing, you know, things at a target and hitting it. That's all we are. And when you achieve really at such a young age, those things are in place to take over the world. There's nothing that can stop you except you and your ability to maintain your attention. Some of us are this close to pulling in exactly what you want, and you just take your attention off it. Had you just stayed with it until you pulled it in, might have been another week, it might have been another year, but that thing would have been yours, and you would have realized the value of staying on focus for the thing you want. Anybody who has anything in their life, that's the only thing they did. There's luck and there's all these little things that play along with it, but fundamentally it's all your ability to maintain the want, the desire, and the attention to pull it into your life.
I think that's one of the great skills that KBEV teaches people, because there's very little roadblocks to getting anything produced here. And we have, like, you know, state-of-the-art equipment. There's no excuses to, like, oh, I can't do this because this or that. So it's a great place to learn that all the power, all you need is the driving force that's within yourself.
Right. No, absolutely. You guys were absolutely creative. The stuff that you guys came up with, your news performances, just everything had like this. They were like Saturday Night Live skits. Do you know what I mean? And you knew you're like, you might as well have been on Saturday Night Live. You could have used those for audition tapes.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's like kind of pulling their own little thing, right? I mean, that's part of it too. You want to create the illusion that you're at CNN. You're actually in a newsroom, right? And you want drama to happen. You want the worst things to play out as badly as they can play out. And you want everybody to know how just awful this is. And then you bring them all in and say, hey, this is what's going on here. And this is all about ego, or this is about someone not communicating, or this is whatever. And you all work it out. You go, oh, I see. Oh, okay. Now it's plain and clear that I was, you know, my mind was in the wrong place. And now I've got the full exposure of what not to do again. Right? And I love it. I love that my favorite moments are when there's this like newsroom or KBEV drama that's like just exploded. Mm-hmm. And I let it explode. I like it to get to the place where it's at. It's like clearest
and it most shows there's an investment, like for all these kids to be like that implies that there is an ecosystem, like, you know, back
Yeah, absolutely. You can't cut it short because then the message isn't going to be felt in the same way. It has to run. You have to allow to let enough rope out to hang someone's self so they know that this was a hanging going on, or you have to allow for the whole drama to run its course,
right,
and then bring everybody in and say, look, when you did this, these are the factors that played into this whole drama. The biggest thing is this: in life, there are absolutely no problems, none. You were fed a false premise that you're gonna have to endure problems and problems and problems and problems in your life, when they should have told you there are no such things as problems. You'll be encountering situations and situations and situations your entire life, nothing more. And because you understand that they're only situations, what you look at in a situation is the silver lining, the one little potential, the one little piece of hope in this situation. Maybe there isn't, it's hopeless. Okay, I'm gonna take care of it, and that's as good as we can do. I'm gonna just, whatever that is, I'm gonna go straight to it. Things I have no power over, I let go. But 9 times out of 10, there's something in it. Maybe it's down the road, it's goodwill, it's whatever that is, but there's a silver lining in it, and that's what you're looking for. And it's like walking up to somebody and say, hey, we got a problem. And instead of saying, hey, we got a situation. It's just that one's a fight, and if this was a mob, you know, a noir film, would say, we got to put a fix on them. We got a problem, we got to put a fix on them. What's the fix mean? The fix means someone's going to get hurt, and it's not going to be me. I don't care about the outcome as long as I'm not on the short end of the stick. That's a fix. Most people fix problems. First of all, they create problems. A problem is a situation that you turned into a problem. And you take that problem and you expound it by telling everybody about your drama, explaining in colorful detail how you've been jacked or whatever that is. And you feed it to everybody. And before you know it, all that energy comes back and explodes in your face when you never had a problem to begin with, right? And you discover at the end of it that you turned a situation into a problem, and that, in fact, you're the problem. You're the problem. How bad is that? That's really kind of...
How do you solve a problem? When
first of all, I don't have a problem.
But I'm saying...
I have no problems, ever. I have situations. What do I do with the situation?
Internal situations?
Internal?
Yeah.
There is no problems. I never have a problem. I don't use the word problem. I take that out of my lexicon.
Okay.
I have no problems. I have situations.
I'm with that.
I have situations. Because the moment you enter the realm of a problem,
there's implied anxiety.
You've already put a layer of, you know, negativity into the whatever the... You already doused out the hope for opportunity.
Yeah.
You already took the little germ of the spark of potential and smothered it by giving it a context that's already a square box that you can't get out of. Yeah, so the word, that's just a psychological framework that for most, they don't get, because everybody wants to fix stuff.
Right.
Everybody's got a fix. I got all these penalties that you're going to suffer from because of it, and don't take me out of that, because that's how I know and that's what works for me. And there's people that say, I do things by the book, right? That's an indication that you have no discretion except to operate in the world of problems and to align the fix with standard solutions that people that ilk. These are for people that are undertakers, IRS accountants, or you know guys that are, you know, the guys that work with just fixed kind of mentalities that don't operate in the realm of free will. Yeah. The other thing is to be conscious of life only happens in one place. Where?
This breath.
That's it. Life only happens where you're breathing. And if you can really consciously wrap your brain around the idea that the sum total of both of you, you know, Bennett and Owen and myself, we arrive in this unfolding moment right here, right now. This is it. There's nothing else. This is it. This is the sum total of everything we ever did arriving in this present moment. Right? Mm-hmm. Nothing bigger than it. How could there be? This is our life, right? And you're aware of it. You're aware that I might not get another breath. It's all happening right here, right now. And when you're aware of it, now you're in the game because you're completely conscious. I can't put this off till tomorrow. It has to happen right now. Because where, how am I promised another breath tomorrow? No, it's all here right now. Straighten all your shit out right here, right now. What, where else is there to straighten it out? A thought form is only a thought form about the future. Where will your future arrive except in the present moment? It can't arrive anyplace else. So you line up everything you want in the present moment, and you move, you know, with force and a concentration on what it is you want in the present moment. That's all part of breathing and living in the present moment, because we know in these present moments are going to amount to something. So you act on it. You have to get to it immediately, because there's an immediacy to it, because you're living in the present moment. And those present moments, if you do, even if you do a little every day, but it's concentrated, you don't get a little bump. You get what's called a quantum leap. Concentrated effort on one outcome over time puts you in front of an audience of showing a film. How'd you get there? 1 year later, I'm here. I just put an hour in every day, 20 minutes working on a script, and then I focused on getting the thing shot, and next thing I know, I'm standing in front of an audience. They think you're lucky. No, a quantum leap is when you concentrate on something that maybe you don't have full time for, but you're steadfast and really paying attention to what it is you're working towards over a year, over 2 years, over five, whatever that is, but you're steadfast, right? Your attention is never diverted. That's what the payola isn't a little payola. It's a stratosphere. It's a quantum payola. So never look at small efforts over time with a goal that is, you know, absolutely an aim that you know is worthy, and you know that you have to do it. It's when you don't do it that all that quantum leap potential is lost. Right?
This right here is...
I needed to fix
what
it.
This is exactly what I wanted when we... reconnection with Karen. This is the most invaluable part of the whole KBEV endeavor, which is Carrie is first and foremost, you said mentor, but you're a spiritual teacher.
Yeah,
you're implanting a lot of young minds with a lot of advanced stuff that doesn't hit people until they do drugs in college.
And then they call you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But and that is really valuable, because when people, kids grow up, and they kind of like hit some rockier patches or some like moments of unknowing. It's great to be able to look back in memory and remember that there was someone there who did understand before they did.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Especially in a public school, which is
a place you're forced to be, and
a place you're forced to not think about things too hard. A place that's all mucked up in bureaucracy and rules.
Yeah.
And it's incredible to meet somebody who can see through the matrix of it all.
Oh yeah.
Because when that shatters for a person, like, and it does, you know, like, you wanna still have people from the old world, the days before.
Oh yeah.
That can bridge that for you.
Oh yeah.
So that's...
Well, that's, I mean, the frightening thing when you come into, this is an institution, right? Public schools are really, they were called government schools. They changed it to public schools because it sounds a little nicer. But having come from an independent world, right? I mean, I already understood exactly how to separate money from people, the psychology involved in just operating your own independent abilities to live and exist all by myself, right? When you do that, when you can achieve your own independence, stand on your own two feet and maintain and have success with it, coming into an institution, you see it for what it is. It's like a bad sitcom, right? You see it exactly how it's played out, and over time, the institution becomes exactly that. You're institutionalized. And over time, it's a learned pattern, it's a learned behavior. It starts from universities. This is your work. You're going to go into teaching. I'm going to teach you exactly how to be a teacher. And it is an indoctrination that is completely placed on you. And then you're pushed into this, and it's accentuated, and it's now you get to see it in action, and they join the unions, and there's codes, and there's all this stuff that is completely in line with the kind of barrel that they want you to live in, and now you go into that environment with it, having not been part of that and coming from an independent world.
Yeah.
I've got an education too, but not in the same way. And I get to watch it, and I can see how frightened most teachers are, afraid of their own shadow. They don't want to know you. They're going to know you. They're going to know this much of you, but they're not going to know any more of you. You're not going to get my personal phone number, and you're not going to know anything about me. And like, we're going to have this exchange, but I'm going to be this teacher, and you're going to be this student. Done.
Yeah.
I'm not done. I don't have an investment in you personally. I want to have an investment in teaching you, and my job's done. I'm not teaching you. I'm showing you how to do some stuff.
Well, it's a delicate thing, because it's like, I think that my youth definitely put me in a position of like, being very comfortable with sort of shirking the rules or expectations of a given environment made us kind of comfortable, a little iconoclastic or something, which I think has been an asset, like moving through other schools and other places.
No, yeah.
But I also have, like, at the same time, like a new respect for these kind of infrastructures that like were there that I didn't fully take advantage of, like. Like, I, you know, as you get older and you think, like, wow, what if I had learned everything that was taught to me at school? Like, if I walked out of that place, like, with having read all those books and, like, actually understanding them, like, that's a pretty amazing thing that a public school system, that humanity has just, like...
Well, you were here at a good time. You still had Pressman. I mean, look at Pressman. Pressman.
No, I didn't. That was Eli.
So
but I did have good, really good arts training.
Eli,
I mean,
it was the Eli.
Theater
okay,
and singing,
right,
all
you're
that
right.
Was,
Eli
was good. But yeah. Like, I was, you know, history classes, like just your main subjects. I was just very incapable of being studious. And it's
right.
Like, if I was to give advice to kids, I don't think you can get through anything. It's just like where my brain was. I don't think it could have been any other way. But
right.
Like, I do have a, I am kind of like infatuated by this like. Wow, this place of learning. But then again, I had that realization while I was still in college, and I still didn't learn anything there.
Yep, yep.
So it's like, it's just not who I am. It's just,
how was your college experience? How did all that turn out?
It turned out okay. I mean, I was going to school. I feel like, you know, high school was this really magical time where, like, it made me think of, really see the world in this sort of, like, fortune favors the bold sort of way.
Yeah.
And I think it was in that spirit that I decided to go to school, like, in the middle of nowhere, in Ohio, like, a kind of foreign place. And, like, it was very expansive because it was, like, different kinds of people and being around wildlife and nature. It was, like, a very, you know, at times kind of cosmic experience. And, again, I did not take to academe, like, all too well.
Right.
Still did radio.
I did continue to do radio.
Oh, nice.
And I studied drama, so I kind of, in many ways, it was similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's like a culture shock to get, I mean, you too, to get ripped out of, like, an environment and a fabric of your kind of comfort is yeah, it's part of life, though. You have to, the exposure to that is necessary.
Yeah.
You know, to survive New York, to survive Ohio, it's like that's, you know, you can get all the certificates in the world, right, and have all these doctorates or whatever that is that, that made you smart and showed that you were smart and means nothing by comparison to someone who's wise through experience.
Right.
Right? The trade-off for being locked into the mode of academics and doing well,
yeah,
doesn't guarantee, or and worse than that, if you spent your whole life thinking that that's my mission to absorb all this stuff, now I can go take on the world, you've shortchanged yourself because you left out the experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
The experiences, not only the experiences, because experience without reflection, experience without the ability to go back and forth from the experience and measuring it throughout your life and coming up and that's wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to go back and reassess and remeasure and recalculate how I could have done it better, what was missing from that, and recognize I failed and this is something I need to learn, and all these like components that have nothing to do with IQ or the ability to be smart. It has more to do with the ability to the wisdom. Wisdom doesn't come from being smart. Wisdom comes from recognizing maybe you're not smart and that I got to figure it out all on my own. And that's, you can be in the middle of a forest and there's one guy who knows how to live in the forest, right? Because he's figured it out. You'd be dead in a week, and this guy, without this guy who's got no, he never got out of high school, he's going to save you. I mean, and so you run into situations your whole life where you respect people because of their titles. But they don't, the smartest people in the world maybe, but they have no wisdom.
Have you seen Triangle of Sadness?
No.
That movie that's out now? It's very good. It touches on some of those themes.
Really?
I highly recommend it.
Oh, I gotta see it. Director. Triangle of Sadness. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I mean that's
I think growing up in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills can do like two things simultaneously, which is at once you're in this like scenario where a culture that really values success and star power and glamour and clout, in other words, and like so you're kind of at the mercy of that uniquely, like you are more intoxicated by it than others, but depending on how close you get to it from a young age, you also kind of see through it in this other way, which is like ultimately kind of liberating because you...
Oh, no, absolutely. That still comes to me. It didn't dawn on me until like this year, maybe just last month. But people always come up to me in Beverly Hills, old timers. The guy's 80 years old. He goes, hey, you're dead. Let me give you a hug. He goes, Timmy. He's like, I was an assistant director on all these movies. And he's like, wow. Guy like shows up for my board meeting. I never knew the guy knew my dad.
Right.
And then I start looking at the Hall of Fame, you know, all the famous people on everybody in entertainment my dad worked with.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Blake Edwards or Harvey Korman or Lynn Stallworth and Mike Fenton, casting directors. I mean, it's like anybody was somebody in Hollywood. Even Mirisch, we had Mirisch in here, the ex-mayor. My dad worked with all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had an office in Beverly Hills, and so did I. So I'm like, holy shit. These guys go back to the 50s, right? In Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And I'm still here. But the idea of recognizing stardom and recognizing fame and people like, you know, just treating you like a god, it's my dad, you realize that's kind of a sham too.
Yeah.
Right?
That's ultimately what I'm saying.
It's every I'm not moved by any of that because it's meaningless.
And it makes you dig deeper because it's like I think a lot of kids here have what a lot of people think they want. You know? So like if at a young age you have what everyone wants, but you're not necessarily satisfied, it's going to push you into searching in some deeper waters.
Oh yeah.
And like it's a blessing and a curse. But like, yeah, it's at least the truth.
Oh yeah. Well, you, if you had good examples of someone who showed you, and it's in your.
I think that like we still are like kind of trying to look at, I don't know, like what the a well lived life looks like, and what are goals worth aspiring to, and like how does that intersect with art, which is essentially like a vocation or talent that we are born with. Like, what do you have to offer? You know, those questions are still alive, but I think that like we got to. I felt like I got to jump on them in a way that.
Oh no was, doubt. Yeah. Well, I come to the conclusion too that I think you have to be willing to like spend the whole day, the whole week, the whole month doing whatever it is you do by yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Completely by yourself. And knowing there's like a nirvana in that. And that if you can't be at one with yourself and find that this is, look, I'm living large. I'm all by myself. There's no one there actually. I've got a family and but literally, we come into the world alone. We're going to leave alone. But you have to kind of be at peace with just yourself first. There's nothing wrong with not doing anything if that's what you want to do. If you want to just sit in the park and watch butterflies and the people doing.
In awe of creation.
Yeah, just that's
yeah,
fine.
Well, I think that, like, I don't know, maybe people like you have, like, the wisdom that is being offered is sort of that, like, synthesis of those two things. It's like a, like, I definitely left Beverly and, like, still have in me, like, a thread of, like, ambition is, I guess, the word. Like, ambition to go out and conquer or succeed. But, like, there is a level of humility, which is also just, like, a, you know, you have people and experiences that teach you that, like, nothing is really tops the marvel of the present moment you're in. You know?
No, it's true.
It's like...
Yeah, I mean, I...
It may, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, but you also have a sense, we all, especially when you're young, you have to aspire because you know in your heart that there's a place you got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing you want the most, you're going to avoid because that's just how it works. You got to walk through the tunnel of fear to get to happiness. You got to do it, right? And you know, when you got something that's calling you to do something, and you're not acting on it, that's a painful place. And you're going to, it's going to show.
You'll be punished.
You'll be punished. You'll punish yourself. It's yeah. Like, it's, you can't run away from
you
it.
You can't jump to the nirvana stage.
No, you can't. But what you have to do is look, if you're a creative person, you have to be creative. You be creative with the, you know, I was talking about when you guys showed up here, we got to make a film, right? Just make a film because you got to make a film. And that's perfectly, you have no, if you don't have any kind of, you have no, what is it? If someone who isn't, someone's not going to be disappointed about something, so you have no preconceived notions of greatness, right? You're just taking it on for the sake of art, and you do everything in your power not to fail. Mm-hmm. You do everything in your power not to fail. You take on a simple mission. I want to make a film. I want to put my name on a film, and this is what I want to do, right? Today, there's no excuse not to make a film. Absolutely, unequivocally not. Just none. Someone who's talented and has like ambition in that arena, you're absolutely deluding yourself to think that this isn't something you're supposed to take on. So you take it on. And when you take it on, the whole idea of taking on something that's bigger than you, but you have the ambition to do it, the moment you decide to take it on, it's like an ant leaving the anthill, yeah. Right? We talked about this, right?
I think about this.
Yeah, it's the ant who leaves the ant hill. The ants never leave ant hills because they're 9-to-5ers who just only know one thing, this one trick. Stay on the ant, stand in the outline, get your money, and when you leave the ant hill, you trail blaze, you start kicking up dust. And when you kick up dust, there's this one ant all by itself blazing its own trail. You get God's notice. Like, holy crap, this guy's left the anthill. The fact that he saw you leave the anthill is all the power you're going to need, because now, if you're serious and you're actually doing everything in your power to make it happen, you have divine intervention. Makes all the connections you'll ever need. Doors will open and people will arrive because you've now called upon this this energy that, like, the act of setting out and being honest about making it happen is all in motion now, and everything just starts to crystallize.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's absolutely, it's just the moment you decide to do it, before you know it, it's done. There's no excuse not to do it. And so that's like, especially when you're young, that's when you're supposed to, like, you shouldn't have any real expectations. That's the word I was looking for. No real expectations except the act of completing something that you can put your name on. That you're like this is fine. You got to start with something, and you get on to the next one. Everything has a beginning, but you have to start with something. And why not just take on the thing that you know you want the most, whatever that is, and follow through with it. You don't need, you only need a core group to make stuff happen, because there's not a lack of talent in Hollywood or anywhere in the world, but Hollywood, everybody's here. It's the Mecca, right? It's the guys that are at the core, at the center of making stuff happen, that everybody rely on. Never short of technicians, never short of talent, short of filmmakers with the production ability and the producing ability to actually make things happen. It's like the circus comes to town, but there's only one ringmaster. He's hired everybody. He's pulled you under this tent, and everybody's praying for a ringmaster. When you get a ringmaster, that's what I am. I'm a ringmaster, right? This is my tent. That's all it is. I will what it is. We're sitting in a room that used to be a storage place, right? The idea is whatever it is that you will, it'll all happen. And that's like anything. And it's like, it's you two guys. I'm surprised you haven't made like this major movie. So, I mean, it's like already, yeah, it's already in the cards. So it's gonna, the next time we talk, we'll be talking about our movie. It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. You're off to, where are you headed? You're going to Hawaii?
Oh, tomorrow. Yeah, I'm going to Hawaii. Going to a writer's conference.
Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the conference about?
I don't know. I fell into it.
Well,
a friend of my mom's who's a writer went and said it would be good for me. And
oh, good. That's fantastic. I mean, that's
no in Kauai?
Kauai.
Yeah, that's no, crazy. That's like a beautiful place to be. That's like inspirational. There's an energy field there that's unlike any place else. I love
never
it.
Been. Go to New York. I know it'll...
Oh, I've been there a dozen times. I've been Maui. Maui's become my favorite, but it doesn't matter where I'm at. Oh, they're all the same. If you're in Hawaii, you're in Hawaii. You'll find what you're looking for somewhere.
Yeah. Almost definitely.
Yeah.
And you're going to New York.
I'm going for 2 weeks, yeah.
Oh, wow. What part of New York?
I think I'm staying in Manhattan, but I got friends all over.
Oh, okay.
All
yeah, that's another fun place. That's yeah. Like that'll get you revved up.
But we need to get to work.
We're gonna. We got some stuff in the oven.
We do.
Both individually and together.
I've only been home for like a month and a half, and I've been trying to get disciplined and carve out.
Well, that's it.
Standard. He's following the music path.
Yeah, I've been doing all
nice.
That.
Yeah, I've seen that. You've got some good stuff.
Thanks. So, but yeah. I hope to synthesize all of it. I mean, like.
Well, we got we made a music video. We work on video. So we've got some.
But like
filmmaking there, but we've got the larger projects in mind.
Yeah, we do
for sure.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, no, I can see once you guys get settled. I mean, you're kind of in a regroup. Stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I
that's why we came here.
Today. Yeah, I know. I mean, we missed a couple of the other meetings. I mean, it's like we've had these over the years, right?
Yeah. We had a Zoom call.
We've been doing it, I think, ever since high school. We've had these we've had these major sessions. This is a major sesh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hot box.
Hot box. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
I love the opportunity to get one of these in the can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's part of history, and I mean there's an energy field like this little vortex. Us three have been doing this for a long time, and we know we really share each other's kind of energy.
Yeah.
And there's I always feel like I got to do something with these guys before they get too big.
Well, it's good to hear you say that, because I'm sitting in here at KBAB and I'm like. This is untapped
power like outside of it. Does that make any sense? Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, unequivocally.
I'm like, if there's a lot of ways a you or me walks into this and hitches a ride on the KBEV.
Oh yeah, strength. Oh yeah, no doubt. So. Do you know we almost did that Lemon thing? Remember Keith Lemon, the Keith Lemon show? Do you remember that?
What's the deal with that?
It was a show that they were going to come, and I was going to put you guys in it. It was part of Fremantle.
Oh yeah,
the script and was like it was a hit TV show, the Keith Lemon show. Went to like 200 million people. The guy just won a BAFTA. He's a big star. I forgot his real name. The Keith Lemon Show. Mm-hmm. Forgot the actor's name. But I was going to put you guys in it. I already had a part for you. But then I don't
remember about this.
Yeah.
I did?
I think
you told me about this.
Yeah, I'd filled you in, but it fell apart. At the very end, they squashed it at school.
Yeah.
They just didn't want it to happen. Yeah. They thought he was misogynistic, and that can't have that here.
Yeah.
Oh, well. And so you guys would have been, you would have been famous at least for a week in England. Yeah,
I was in England recently for 2 months.
Really? What part?
I studied at Oxford. I did a drama.
Oh my God! Did you learn any of the sonnets?
Yeah.
Let me hear one.
In the old age, beauty. Wait, no. In the old age, black was not counted fair, or if it were, it bore not beauty's name. But now is black beauty's successive heir, and beauty slandered with a bastard shame. For each hand hath put on nature's power, faring the foul with art's false borrowed face. Sweet beauty hath no name, no holy bower, but is profaned if not lives in disgrace. Therefore my mistress's eyes are raven black, and they mourners seem, at such who, not born fair, no beauty lack, slandering creation with a false esteem. Yet so they mourn, becoming of their woe, that every tongue says beauty should look so.
Wow, that was great. Wow. Yeah, I know.
Do you follow it? What it means?
Oh, yeah. Well,
he's talking about makeup, how like makeup is wrong.
Wow.
He's like, there's no such thing as an ugly person. Everyone's beautiful, but like, it's pretty much talking about beauty standards.
I
didn't really, sell
it. Yeah, no, well done. I mean, just to memorize it, I remember watching these actresses or actors that got out of RADA or, you know, were at Royal Academy, and that's all they talked about were the sonnets. They couldn't get out of there without memorizing a bunch of sonnets. And I'm like, all right, what's this thing? I had a Shakespeare book, and it had all the sonnets in it, and I started reading them all, trying to like break the code, and the sonnets came down to Shakespeare's kind of pain about not having a child.
Mm-hmm.
He never recreated himself, and when you read the sonnet, every sonnet was part of the same.
He did have children.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did he have children?
I like the way you put it, though. Yeah, one of them died.
One of them died. Well, maybe that's what happened back then, but I don't think
everyone died.
Did Shakespeare have an heir to his throne? Did he have it?
If what you're saying is that like he was sad that none of them were as like prolific as he.
I remember memorizing like the most painful ones. I'd like steal lines from each one of the sonnets, and it was like "Let not winter's ragged hand deface, make sweet some vile treasure thou some place." So don't wait till winter because you're gonna be old. Make sweet some vile treasure. So a woman's vile, but your job is to make it sweet. Let not winter's ragged hand deface. Make sweet some vile treasure thou some place. So this beauty which you hold in lease, yourself's again when yourself's decreased or deceased. So you have a baby, you'll be gone, and the baby will still be here, right? You're going down, the candle's burning, and the new one's, the flame is coming.
Yeah.
Be not self-willed, for thou art much too fair to be death's conquest and make worms thine heir. So if you don't have a baby, your only heir will be the worms that ate you.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. The Shakespeare things.
Oh, the Shakespeare, yeah. That's the one thing I got my name from Shakespeare, so I have to know, at least I have to know
true.
A little of
that's
it.
True.
Yeah. But, what's your next big adventure? What is it that you're aiming towards? Have you set your sights on something big, or you haven't decided what that is yet?
Yeah, no, most definitely. I have a writing partner who I met at NYU, and we've been working on a good number of projects. Just had a radio play released, and we have a TV pilot that we've been sort of chiseling at for a while, and we're hoping to make it really respectable by the end of this year, and shop it around to some people who we know.
Wow, that's great. What about you, Owen?
My main priority right now has just been writing songs and trying to perform around town, figure out bars, and just get some chops for live performing. I play with a 3-piece band.
Yeah.
So I wanna get my performing skills a little more.
That's hardened. That's how you start. I mean, it's like you have to go into it. You have to like enter the fray, and you have to put everything into it, because that might be the place where it all starts.
Yeah.
And it is, because you're making it start. There has to start somewhere. Every journey starts with its first step. And so, going into the most, I mean, that's a piece of cake for you.
I have interest in a lot of, like, fields, and I'm worried that I juggle too many things and then nothing ever actually really happens. So.
Well, set your sights for a grand, something grand. That's the whatever that grand thing is, that's your aim. Aim at the thing you want the most. Even if it starts here, this is what my ultimate goal
is.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
And that's all you really have to do with anything. If you're working towards something, have a grand goal that's the anchor of why you're moving towards
it. So everything can kind of...
It'll all line up. You have to crawl before... Baby pulls itself on the ground, right? Before it can start to crawl. You got to take every baby in its... But know that I want this... This baby's going to be an athlete. He's going to be running a 100-yard dash, and I'm going to make it. We're going to get there, but it takes a little while. But I'm working towards it, right?
Yeah.
And so if you know that this is the pinnacle of why I'm working towards this, it changes everything, because you can see it. You have to see it. Seeing it in the quantum field, the moment you crystallize the thing that you really want, you put that into the world. It has, in the quantum field, crystallized. You have to move quickly because someone could steal it.
Hmm.
It's there. It's your job to finish it, but someone else can rob it and take it because you put it out there.
Hmm.
It's 100% your making because you created it. It's a unique vision and a creative force that is developed from your own mind. And now you move it, you move towards it as fast as you can. You possibly can, and how many lawsuits are there about people who stole my stuff because you're asleep behind the wheel, and you probably know things that you thought of that were like unique, and then someone else is doing it, right?
Yeah,
those were yours.
Yeah.
And that's part of the my thing is I got to get it in the can. I got to like capture it right now. I got to get it and I'll edit it, but I mean, editing is not as difficult as capturing it.
Are these kids carving them up for you, doing your edits for you?
Not really. They're working on their own stuff. I got to get, for my own projects, I got to get like a whole little
team.
Yeah.
Why don't you just go into like the veterans of the KBEV vets?
It's true. I might be tapping you guys. You guys might,
I told you, I'd be, because here's the thing. This is a long shot, but you're working with all these, the 60s music people.
Oh, yeah.
A big struggle for me is like, I'm not gracefully merging with my own age group and in terms of like the stuff I'm working on.
Yeah.
And I'd love to be connected with like someone who's still alive and somehow still working from that era of music.
Oh, absolutely.
No, otherwise it's like a bunch of people my age who are feeling in the dark.
I'll get you involved in, because that might be your in.
That could be something. If I have one former Wrecking Crew.
Yeah. Member. Well, I'm like working with all of them right now. I'm surrounded by.
Are they still playing?
They all are. They're doing recordings. So like, I'm like, I'm right in the middle of big stuff when it comes to that era.
I want a piece of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll plug both you guys in. I'll plug you both in if you become an integral part of it. We'll talk about it, and I'll. The one issue I have is kind of taking on too much stuff. If I'm not playing a big enough game, and you should think the same way. If you're not playing a big enough game, you'll screw it up, right? So play the biggest game you can play.
Hmm.
play the biggest game you can play. That means take on as much of the world that you're interested in. And it's very difficult to screw it up because you got so many pots spinning that you've attracted so much goodwill and you've created so much and you have them all spinning and you're still driving for more, right? So then I can bring, you know, these things are all spinning. They haven't stopped. I go back 20 years. I got things that are still spinning. They haven't stopped. I'm like 100%. Now I just have to plug people in. And it's like, you guys are walking into, all you have to do is ask. That's a thing in life. Don't be shy about asking what you want. You want something, go up to the guy's door and knock on it. Don't like, man, can I know somebody? I'm like, no, go up, the guy lives right there. Yeah. Go knock on his door. He's just a regular person. Go ask him, tell him you want to do something with him. Yeah. And they'll go, hey, yeah, get out of here, kid. Or, hey, what do you got? Most likely, most people are really good natured, you know, especially, you know, artists. And if you're honest and you tell them really what you're interested in, next thing you know, you're like in their house recording with them. It's just that simple. I mean, it's just, it's, you guys are the future. And so whatever it is you want, you have to go after it. And if it's something you like from that era, I'll connect you as much as I can. You'll be right where you want to be, and you'll know where you need to go in it.
It'd be good to know. It'd be good to have a direct collision with these people.
You want to do more than that. You want to help them out. You want to get in their fold and you always want to aim whatever it is you really want. Try to find that in a mentor, right?
Yeah.
A mentor who's actually in it, that specific field, and become an intern, the most lowly job you could possibly do, walking his dog or whatever that is to get in there. You can't feel like I want to partner with him right now. You just want to help him out, and you help him out, and being in that orbit and learning his tricks. And if it works out, you move towards the inner circle of what he does, and before you know it, you become him. Mm-hmm. You're the guy. And that's everybody who's really uses that route. They didn't just show up there. They like that. They recognize, I want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. I want to get close to that. So find who that is and get as close as you can to it, because that's yours. Nobody else is occupying that space. You want that space. You want to be in that arena. You want to be around the thing that you want. And no better way to help somebody out, especially an older guy. I mean, it's really nice when you got someone who's older and has all this talent. Because they don't have as many friends anymore either. They're like, the list of friends are gone. And most of them are dead. Or they just, And if they're always looking for young, inspired people that are honest and talented. Right? Yeah. You can't go wrong. Yeah.
All right, we gotta... I gotta know, because that's important.
It is. My dad used to do that. My dad used to teach acting. I used to sit in there as a little kid and watch him. And they're like, I can't knock on his... Somebody wanted something. It was a big... Go to his door. This is his address. Go knock on his door. Tell him I sent you. No way. I'm not going to do that. That's embarrassing. Okay, well, then don't do it. Then you don't want it.
Right.
You have to do the things that you want. Go straight to it. You can't be shy about that.
Yeah.
It's
counterintuitive how simple some things really are.
Yeah. Absolutely. But
I'm going through that right now. I mean, in terms of trying to figure out where to play around town, it's like
you have to.
You invent.
You don't make a call, you don't get a call.
Yeah, I know.
That's it.
It's like
every no, you're closer to a yes. You get all these little psychology things. You have to. You can't take anything too personally. You just have to move, and you become better at the lines that you're going to be using. You become better at asking. You might be better if you walk in. You might be better if you go in there and buy a couple of drinks and talk to a couple of people. Right. You got to maneuver your way around to get the thing you want.
But you guys just start doing it.
You got to start, but you can't not do it.
I'm doing it tonight.
Yeah, you have to. You have to. If you go to sleep without moving your marker up closer to the goal, you're not after anything. It's just it. You should be embarrassed. You should have some failures. You should have whatever it takes. But if you didn't, then you're not alive. You're a fake. It has to be humiliating. It has to be embarrassing. It has to be all those things to get to the diamond. The diamond just doesn't show up. you have to chisel all this crap away. And the crap is the fun, because that's all the stuff you talk about getting there. Yeah. It's no fun if someone says, here, there you go, done. It's like, no, it's like, it's right. The journey's, yeah, like, that's the fun,
it's
part.
True. Yeah, it's true.
That's the fun part. Yeah.
It's hard to know when you're waist deep in crap.
You'll work your way out of it. That's how it all works. All right. I think we've turned this into a regular podcast. How long is this?
2 hours.
Wow.
Nice.
This feels like that trip to San Diego.
Yeah. It does.
Doesn't it?
Do you remember that truck that drove by that was like it was covered in drawings of like feces and things?
Yeah.
And it was called like the poop mobile or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
One surreal twist along the road. And I remember just staring into my coffee cup and just feeling ecstatic.
I remember we had a conversation kind of like this conversation. And next thing you knew, we were in San Diego. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was like time.
You're like,
simultaneously went by like that, and it took days at the same time.
Oh, it did. It was
a timeless.
We were in
our drive to San Diego. Yeah, that was like overnight.
It was a time warp. We're in a warp. There was a complete, absolute warp about the whole expedition. Everything in it was absolutely, oddly enhanced. Really was. Yeah. I remember we had some conversations that were like just kind of like tonight, but in a different way. Yeah. You know what I mean? Traveling is always a little bit more fun.
No, a little. Breaking out of jail.
But this has been a pleasant reunion, as always. I mean, I don't feel much different than I did, except, you know, it kind of entering back into high school, like the same vibe and everything about
it. That's kind of where we're at now. It's like, it's a new, we're at the beginning, we're freshmen again.
You're relaunching. Yeah. It's a beautiful place to be, because you're not the same people. You're imbued with a whole different experience and a whole different wisdom.
Yeah. Fresh out of the cocoon.
You did. You shattered the cocoon 100%. You were successful. Well done. To survive New York and to survive Ohio and to be here intact, ready for the next mission is commendable. And I'm gonna be here ushering in the new there's a reason why we connect and why we're here at this juncture, and I'm gonna take it to the next level.
I want you there. 100%. That's what I want.
All right, gentlemen. All right. Well, all right. There you go. That marks the end of another Romeo Carey podcast. I want to thank Bennett Gershwin and Owen Lloyd. And we'll see you on the next one.
All right.